reached our cruising altitude, it's time for the Flyover View.
Welcome back to Flyover View, a member of the Heartland Pod family of podcasts. So look at Heartland News from 30,000 feet. From the Gateway Arch to the Rocky Mountains, I'm your host, Kevin Smith. And I want to thank you for joining me today as we dive into the stories most impactful to you. So folks, let's get things started faster than North Carolina dropped Madison Cawthorn this week. Cardinals President DeWitt rips state Senate's culture after sports betting fails to pass. The Missouri Senate's culture is, quote, not conducive to getting stuff done, according to St. Louis Cardinals President Bill DeWitt this week, as a bill to legalize sports betting sought by his and other professional sports teams died. Bill DeWitt III says he and other owners would like to push through legislation next year, but would consider an initiative petition process, which would put the question before voters, should that fail again. He says, I still continue to believe that the legislative approach is the best way to do this, but if we just keep running into a wall every year, we would have to seriously consider an alternative approach. The Missouri General Assembly failed to pass legislation to legalize sports wagering in its annual session that wrapped up on Friday. A bill that would have legalized sports betting passed the Missouri House, but ended up stalling in the Senate. It's very disappointing, according to DeWitt. We've been at this for a few years now. We've had several chances at it. All of our neighboring states have it, and we were really hopeful that this year it would happen, and it didn't happen. DeWitt said the General Assembly's inability to pass sports betting legislation likely goes beyond the issue itself and is a result of political infighting within the Senate. DeWitt speaks to something we've all been seeing this year, infighting between Republicans over nonsense issues, largely brought by the conservative caucus, like CRT concerns, trans sports, a desire to gerrymander Missouri even more than it already is, etc., 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 gumming up the works and preventing legislation with actual impact on Missourians passing. Take my own state senator, Bob Onder, for example. No, seriously, take the guy. Thankfully, he's done after this year, but he spent an enormous amount of time filibustering over the asinine 7-1 congressional district map. I think it's time for all Missourians to seek a change. Racist replacement theory. Several mainstream Republican Senate candidates are drawing on the Great Replacement conspiracy theory, once confined to far-right fringes of the United States politics, promoting the baseless notion that there's a plot to diminish the influence of white people in America. In some cases, the comments have gone largely overlooked, given the hardline immigration rhetoric that has become commonplace among conservatives during the Trump era. But a weekend mass shooting in Buffalo, New York, that was inspired by the racist theory, is drawing new attention to the GOP's growing embrace of white nationalist creed. 3 weeks ago in Arizona, Republican Senate candidate Blake Masters accused Democrats of trying to flood the nation with millions of immigrants to change the demographics of our country. In Missouri, Senate hopeful Eric Schmidt, the state attorney general, said Democrats were fundamentally trying to change this country through illegal immigration. And in Ohio, Republican Senate nominee J.D. Vance accused Democrats of trying to transform the electorate. Warning of an immigrant invasion, Vance told Fox News Channel that Democrats have decided that they can't win re-election in 2022 unless they bring a large number of new voters to replace the voters that are already here. Vance told Breitbart News that Democrats are trying to give 15 million immigrants in the country illegally the right to vote. They're trying to transform the electorate of this country. He made similar comments days later at a town hall in Portsmouth, Ohio. The Vance campaign has declined to comment regarding replacement theory. Some Republican campaigns denied that their statements amounted to replacement theory, but among the experts, there is little question. Five experts on hate speech who reviewed the Republican candidate's comments confirmed that they promote the baseless racist theory, even though the Republicans don't mention race directly. Comments like these demonstrate two essential features of Great Replacement conspiracy theory. They predict racial doomsday, saying it all part of an orchestrated master plan. It's only the language that's been softened, says American University professor Brian Hughes. The basic story they tell is the same one we see in white supremacist chats across the internet. An enemy is orchestrating doom for white Americans by plotting to fill the country with non-whites. Former President Donald Trump repeatedly warned of an immigrant invasion on the southern border. Replacement theory is being investigated as a motivating factor in the Buffalo supermarket shooting, which killed 10 black people and left 3 other people injured. President Joe Biden condemned replacement theory directly and those who spread it. The president continued saying, "I call on all Americans to reject the lie, and I condemn those who spread the lie for power, political gain, and for profit." Representative Liz Cheney, who was ousted from the House Republican leadership for her outspoken criticism of Trump, blamed her own party on Monday for enabling white nationalism, white supremacy, and anti-Semitism. Cheney states, "History has taught us that what begins with words ends in far worse. Leaders must renounce and reject these views and those who hold them." Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell was asked three times on Tuesday in different ways about replacement theory, and he declined to fully respond. In a poll released last week, research found that about one in three Americans believes an effort is underway to replace U.S.-born Americans with immigrants for electoral gain. Fox News' most popular personality, Tucker Carlson, has been one of the theory's biggest proponents. A study of 5 years worth of Carlson's show by the New York Times found that 400 instances in which he talked about Democratic politicians and others seeking to force demographic change through immigration. In interviews with conservative national television and radio over the last year, Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has called replacement theory the Democrat grand plan. In Missouri, at least two Republicans vying for the Republican Senate nomination have made similar statements more recently. While touring the U.S.-Mexico border last month, former Missouri Governor Eric Greitens said that immigrants crossing over illegally were flooding into all the 50 states. A week later, Schmidt, Greitens' Republican rival, claimed that tens of millions of immigrants were crossing into the U.S. illegally because of Biden's policies. "They're fundamentally trying to change this country through illegal immigration policy," Schmidt told conservative commentator Glenn Beck this week. On Tuesday, Schmidt criticized reporting that he had promoted replacement theory as, quote, woke journalism. White House releases plan to boost housing supply. The White House on Monday outlined a plan to boost housing availability and lower costs for renters and homeowners, portraying it as a part of a broader effort to combat inflation for Americans. The administration released a housing supply action plan that officials said would produce more housing supply, including affordable units, in the next 5 years. When aligned with other policies to reduce housing costs and ensure affordability, such as rental assistance and down payment assistance, closing the gap will mean more affordable rents and more attainable homeownership for Americans in every community, according to the White House when they were talking about the outline of the plan. Among the measures detailed as part of the plan are using new financing mechanisms to build and preserve more housing where there are currently financing gaps, and expanding federal financing to make certain loans are more widely available for multifamily developments. The plan also includes steps to ensure government-owned housing goes to owners who will live in the dwellings or nonprofits who will rehab the buildings, rather than large investment firms that may neglect the property. The administration said it will work with the private sector companies to improve supply chain issues that hamper construction. The plan also includes a call to action for Congress. The White House urged lawmakers to pass President Biden's Unlocking Possibilities program, which was passed last year by the House, and would establish a new $1.75 billion grant program through the Department of Housing and Urban Development. The White House also urged lawmakers to pass Biden's 2023 budget request, which includes a proposal for $10 billion in HUD grants to increase accessibility to affordable housing. The housing supply plan was released as the White House has offered myriad proposals to address rising costs that have hampered Biden's agenda and contributed to stagnant approval ratings for months. The president last week called addressing inflation his top domestic policy and acknowledged the difficulties many Americans are facing with high prices of gasoline, food, and other goods. The administration last month announced it would send millions of dollars to states to help offset high home energy costs and another attempt to ease the burden on homeowners. Hey there, folks. I hope you're enjoying the show. I want to remind you that we are a 100% listener-supported family of podcasts, all under the umbrella of the Heartland Pod. You can catch our flagship show, The Heartland Pod, on Mondays every week with Adam Sommer, where he delivers an opening statement before being joined by Sean Diller and Rachel Parker for a talking politics session on the week that was and diving into elections, legislation, and public policy. You can also join Adam on most Tuesdays and Thursdays for Let's Have a Chat, featuring interviews with folks from around the Midwest. On any given week, he could be chatting up a politician, a farmer, a scientist, you name it. On Wednesdays, the focus shifts to a rotating cast of special reports from The Delta with science teacher and author Nicholas Linke, and High Country, Sean Diller's Western Political Updates. Learn more at heartlandpod.com, and don't forget, for full access to the Last Call episodes and the Heartland News blog, sign up on Patreon as a podhead today. And while I have your ear, I want to quickly tell you about an exciting opportunity coming up on June 11th in Columbia, Missouri at Stevens Lake Park. Please join the entire Heartland Pod crew from 4 to 8 p.m. as we welcome an exciting panel of guests, names that you all know: Lindsey Simmons, Ray Reed, Spencer Toter, and Jess Piper. Denver. Following that panel, a live recording of the main pod will happen, and some live music. I hope to see you there. And now, the lightning round. Missouri County Health Ordinance blocks proposed silica sand mine. Last month, Leah McNeil and her sister Jillian Ditch Anslow got letters in the mail stating that NextGen Silica planned to mine 249 acres just down the road from their property. "We don't want this here," says Anslow. "We don't want this near our homes. I don't want my daughter breathing in silica dust, which is dangerous and a known carcinogen. Best case scenario, they drop our water table enough to where we need new wells, or we need to drill deeper to go to our water," says McNeil. "Worst case scenario, they contaminate the water with the chemicals they use to clean the sand." As NextGen reached mineral rights agreement with multiple landowners in the area, the sisters started an online petition that quickly gathered more than 2,300 signatures. The proposed site is located on roughly 249 acres of land off Highway 32. Residents say they're concerned about sand dust pollution in the air and water. On Tuesday, the County Health Department joined the County Commission in adopting a joint health ordinance. It states a mining facility cannot be located closer than a quarter of a mile to an occupied residence or stream or half a mile from a school or church, meaning now the proposed mine does not comply with several of the parameters in the new ordinance. As oil rises, so do prices, and so has consumption. For the first time, gas prices averaged at least $4 per gallon in every state, and analysts think they could stay high for the rest of the year. Gas Buddy Petroleum analyst Patrick DeHaan said the reason behind the rising prices is a perfect storm of sorts impacting the market. "Oil prices continue to go up," he says. "Gas consumption is up. Inventory is down. Basically, all of the ingredients to push up gas prices are doing just that. The problem comes down to a simple supply and demand economics that has little to do with politics," he says. "People may like to point to presidents or their administration, but largely they have no real control over gas prices." Per DeHaan, really, as Americans and as a global economy, consumers have more input than politicians do on how often they fill up their tank. Parents are warned to not feed babies aged 6 to 12 months cow's milk, except in an emergency. As the months-long shortage of baby formula continues to impact U.S. families, questions about other infant feeding options have spiked. President Joe Biden's administration has announced steps aimed at easing the shortage, including reopening the largest formula manufacturing plant in the country and increasing imports from overseas. Though relief might be on its way, many parents are still desperately seeking alternatives right now as their trusted baby formula brands remain out of stock. There have been some tweets suggesting that parents can now feed their babies ages 6 months or older cow's milk, and it's leading to confusion. That's because cow's milk typically isn't recommended for babies until they're at least a year old. To be clear, parents shouldn't feed cow's milk to babies 6 to 12 months old, except in an emergency when every other option has been exhausted. Cow's milk has too many proteins and minerals for babies' kidneys to handle and does not have enough necessary nutrients, according to the CDC. Rachel Dawkins, a pediatrician at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital, says it is not safe to feed babies whole milk or cow's milk before the age of one, really for a couple reasons. Cow's milk does not provide enough iron for babies and it can cause them to become anemic. It also has a lot of different solutes like protein and different things that kidneys don't process well in infants. So we don't recommend cow's milk for kids under 1 year old. If you or someone you know needs to track down formula, please visit the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services for advice, specifically www.hhs.gov/formula/index.html. Texas Governor Greg Abbott's policies and rhetoric are under fire. Even before a gunman opened fire at an El Paso Walmart, Latino legislators had warned Texas Governor Greg Abbott about his anti-immigration rhetoric. Days before the Buffalo shooting, a gunman walked into a hair salon in Dallas and shot and wounded three people. Authorities are investigating it as a hate crime, potentially connected to other shootings targeting Asian-run businesses. The latest violence has renewed criticism of Abbott, who has remained quiet. Abbott's state press office says he hasn't commented on the Buffalo shooting. It didn't respond to additional questions. Domingo Garcia, the president of the League of United Latin American Citizens, said Governor Abbott and the right-wing talk show hosts bear responsibility for rhetoric of hate that produces killers. They need to tone that down to stop with the race baiting and scapegoating of others to get political points and divide Americans, says Garcia. Texas State Rep. Mary Gonzalez, a Democrat from El Paso, recalled that several Texas legislators had warned Abbott before the El Paso shooting in August of 2019 about his rhetoric, which was similar to that used by former President Donald Trump. After the shooting, Latino legislators slammed Abbott for sending campaign mailers dated the day before the attack that told supporters that, quote, if we are going to defend Texas, we need to take matters into our own hands. After the campaign mailing became public, Abbott said mistakes were made. Gonzalez said that Abbott made a commitment to not use that kind of rhetoric that would incite violence or motivate hate or discrimination. However, as we've seen very recently, that is no longer the case, she says. Illinois becomes first state in Midwest to ban untraceable do-it-yourself ghost guns. A measure signed by Governor J.B. Pritzker Wednesday morning outlaws unmarked ghost guns and makes Illinois the only state in the Midwest to ban such weapons. The Illinois law requires all firearms, including 3D printed guns, to be marked with serial numbers. Pritzker says a child should not be able to build an AR-15 like they're building a toy truck. A convicted domestic abuser should not be able to evade scrutiny by using a 3D printer to make a gun. This law will ban those ghost guns and others and will help keep the families and the community safe. Pritzker said that more than 20,000 ghost guns were involved in criminal investigations nationwide last year, a tenfold increase from 2016. Under the law, people who own gun kits would have to get them stamped with serial numbers within 180 days of the effective date of the law. Anyone with a firearm or gun kit without a serial number would be guilty of a Class A misdemeanor for a first violation, and a second violation would be a Class 3 felony. That's all the time we have this week, folks. I want to thank you for joining us. If you feel you have a story that I should look into or possibly highlight on the show, please tweet me throughout the week at KevInMidmo or the pod's parent account at The Heartland Pod. This week's episode featured reporting and information from the Associated Press, KSDK News, the Chicago Sun-Times, NBC, The Hill, and CNN. Thanks for listening.
The Flyover Review is a production of MidMap Media, LLC. Learn more at www.heartlandpod.com or at the Heartland Pod on Twitter. See y'all next week.